This is The Root Cellar on Pioneer 90.1, where regional history and family folklore come together with your hosts, Jim and Jan Stramley.
Hello, and welcome once again to The Root Cellar. The episode for today will be devoted to the Minnesota Boys State High School Hockey Tournament. By the time this episode airs on the radio, the tournament will be over, the champion declared, and the excitement diminished. But how did it all come about? In other words, what are our roots? Minnesota, as you know, has been declared the state of hockey, based on the hockey programs offered to all ages of boys and girls in Minnesota. The high school tournaments, the college and university teams, and of course the professional team Minnesota Wild. Minnesota is a hotbed for hockey. One of the largest and most popular contests in the state of hockey is the Boys State High School Hockey Tournament, held at the XL Center in St. Paul every year. This year was the 66th state tournament conducted in the Twin Cities. The whole concept began in 1945, when the Minnesota State High School League, in cooperation with some interested people in St. Paul, offered the schools in Minnesota an opportunity to participate in a state-sponsored high school hockey tournament. It was the first of such tournaments in the United States. The games were originally played in the St. Paul Auditorium. At the time of the earliest state-sponsored tournament, there were 26 high schools registered for the sport of hockey in Minnesota. The Eveleth Golden Bears went home that year with the state championship. They were to go on to achieve four more. The participants in the first tournament, including our own Thief River Falls, White Bear Lake, St. Cloud, Staples, Rochester, St. Paul, Washington, and Granite Falls. The next year, 1946, in the second state tournament, Roseau took home the championship and became a regular in state competition for years after. And I must tell you, 10 years later, I was there in 1955. Yes, Roseau High, my alma mater, was there again at the tournament. It was the year Thief River Falls went 11 overtime periods with Minneapolis South. I was not a player, but was a student manager for Roseau. I had the privilege and honor to be part of the team. Roseau was defeated by St. Paul Johnson in the quarterfinals 1-0, and we played between Thief's overtime periods, and it was no excuse, but it didn't help matters any. State competition remained in the St. Paul Auditorium until moving to the more spacious Met Center in Bloomington in 1969. It stayed there until the St. Paul Civic Center emerged and the state tournament moved there with all-time attendance records. The first tournaments proved to State High School League officials that such a concept had merit, plus money-making opportunities, and the Minnesota State High School League took full control. It has grown today to be one of the largest attended tournaments in the country. More and more teams are participating in hockey now. Communities are constructing indoor arenas, they're improving coaching, and they have developed youth programs which have been contributing factors in a bigger and better hockey program in the state. There was a short period of time when the state tournament went to a two-tier concept. Instead of dividing the participating schools on enrollment, the coaches suggested division be based on performance and ability. At the end of the season, the coaches ranked the top eight teams, and they played in the state tournament as Tier 1. The rest of the teams played section tournaments to determine who would be in Tier 2 of the state tournament. The idea was to allow more schools to have the experience of state tournament play rather than the same strong schools competing year after year. In 1994, the tournament was reformatted once again. This time it was based on enrollment, and schools were classified accordingly. The smaller schools would be classified in Class A, and the larger schools in Class AA. Schools in Class A could petition to move upward to Class AA if they had proven their ability to compete at that level. Roseau is a prime example of that concept. They still choose to compete with the big boys. This format has now proven to be the best way for more schools to be involved in the state tournament, and fans continue to watch both classifications, A and AA, with attendance continuing to grow. A few years ago, the Minnesota State High School League adopted the 3 17-minute periods to complete a game. They used to play only 15-minute periods, and I believe before that it was 12 minutes. Anyway, teams must participate in a maximum of 25 contests throughout the season, excluding the section tournaments. There are 8 sections in Minnesota, and a representative champion emerges in each section in Class A and in Class AA, respectfully. The new format now has been put into place for the state tournament brackets. It was previously established that one section would play another, and it was rotated each year. It happened sometimes that the best teams could meet each other in the very first round, which ultimately meant that sometimes what should have been the championship game were played early on in the tournament, rather than the best teams working their way to the championship. Now the coaches rank the 4 top seeds, the 4 best teams, in other words, in the state tournament, and each one is placed in a separate bracket. Then the other 4 teams draw by lottery to see who they play for the first game. It seems to work better this way and makes for an extremely exciting tournament. Well, the likes of Neil Broughton, Herb Brooks, John Mayeschitz, Mike Antonovich, Henry Bushy, Aaron Broughton, Butsy Erickson's, and many, 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 many more notable players participated in their early years in Minnesota State High School Hockey and the State High School Hockey Tournament. What a great source of entertainment for us all. Now here is Jan with an interview with my daughter, Kathy.
Hi. Well, of course, the reason for all of this excitement is the fact that Thief River Falls made it down to the State High School Hockey Tournament this year. And what an exciting tournament that was, especially the first game. Well, it's been quite a week. I want to tell my faithful listeners that we have had a death in the family. Jim's sister passed away from cancer. And the result is that we have some family visiting. And one of them is Jim's daughter from Alaska. So I'm going to take this opportunity to talk to her about a couple of things that are going on in Alaska right now, one of which is the Iditarod. You all know about the Iditarod race. The Iditarod, of course, is that sled dog race of 1,000 miles from Anchorage to Nome, across some of the most desolate country you could ever imagine going on a dog sled. And it's an annual event going on right now. And incidentally, Kathy has raced that Iditarod race on a dog sled with a team of dogs of her own. I had a Root Cellar program about that with an interview some time ago. But another thing I want to talk about is a little town called Talkeetna. And we will be visiting that town when we go on our Alaska trip this June. We'll be referring to that later. That's a trip that Jim and I escort. And Kathy lives near that little town of Talkeetna and her husband, Tim. And I think it's interesting because it's a small town that's probably about the same size as Greenbush, maybe even a little smaller. But we'll get into that later. So I want to welcome Kathy Stranley. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, glad to be here. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit first about what's happening with the Iditarod race right now. When did that start? I mean, when did it start this year?
It always begins the first Saturday in March, and they're about halfway up the trail now on their way to Nome.
How many days do they expect to be on the trail?
Just under 8.
And in 8 days, they will go about 1,000 miles. Is that right?
Yes, that's correct. And as far as I know, I am understanding that the weather is good, the trail is great, and things are well on their way.
Good. It'll be interesting to hear how that turns out. Tell me how far from Talkeetna you live.
I live on a little lake that's just about 10 miles out of the center of Talkeetna. And Talkeetna is a friendly town, much like Thief River, where people are willing to tell their story and history of their village. There's about 500 people that live in the seat of this little town and about another 500 that are sprinkled into the woods with cabins, dog mushing kennels, little cozy bed and breakfast cottages.
And Talkeetna actually came into being during the time of the gold rush, am I right?
Yes, that's true. It's about the turn of the century when it began. And mining was popular, and years later, the railroad came along, and these people that are sprinkled into the woods were connected by the railroad and often received their food and supplies that way, and it was a whistle-stop train, so they could whistle the train and get on or get off where their cabins were.
Mm-hmm. I think we realize it was a whole different way of life up there. And I know that, I think it was in the 80s that the first paved highway went through or into Talkeetna. Does it actually go through Talkeetna, or do you go to Talkeetna and turn around and go out again?
It's much like Homer, Alaska, where it's the end of the road. So it's a spur road that takes you into the village, and then it ends at the convolutions of three rivers, the Talkeetna, Susitna, and the Chulitna rivers. And it actually means river of plenty. Talkeetna is a Dena'ian word, and Dena'ian is a subset of the Athabascan people. So it has a lot of culture related to the native people in the area.
Well, since the gold rush is over, thank goodness, what does Talkeetna do now?
Well, it's a base internationally known for a place where climbers come to climb the highest peak in North America, which is Mount McKinley, or now known as Denali. So people will come to the village and then they'll fly up to 7,000 or 14,000 and make their way the rest of the 14,000 feet to the peak.
Where do these people come from?
All over the world.
Really? Well, I know that we are going to be visiting Talkeetna this summer when we go on our trip to Alaska. We do this inland trip. We call it the Alaska Adventure, and we go by bus. So one of the places we're going to be visiting is this roadhouse. Do you know anything about the roadhouse, Kathy?
I think the roadhouse was built in 1914, and it was established as a place for people to come and have a hot meal, warm place to stay before they would go off into the woods to hunt, fish, mine.
Yeah, I understand that. I know you gave us a book about the history of Talkeetna, and I was so interested in that. And that roadhouse is still open today. I talked to the proprietor, and they have Tyrion.
It's called family style.
Yeah.
So there's tables set up, and people will come and sit down with strangers and get to know them. So it's a very friendly place.
And the food is just served family style with big platters and lots of food, I understand.
Yes, they'll have specialty meals like that with family style. Or you can order bakery. She's Trish Costello is the owner, and she's known now for her good bakery and hearty breads, soups.
However, there are other businesses that have cropped up around the roadhouse, and she tells me that there are other places to eat as well. And in the summer, it has become a little bit of a tourist attraction, so I suppose the population rises in the summer.
Well, it's become a big tourist attraction of people coming in and getting a taste of a quaint Alaska village. Like I said, people are very friendly. They like to share their story, history of the area. So the town gets a rambling of people from all over the world. It has an international flair, even though it's this little town in Alaska.
And I think it probably has its share of colorful characters, shall we say?
Well, yes, we probably have some folks that may be a little scary with their long beards and mining-looking sorts, but they're all unique and wonderful in their own way.
Well, I think it's going to be great fun to visit there. We have planned this trip. Of course, that's only one of our many stops on the way, and it's on our way up to Fairbanks this year. We will also be visiting Denali National Park, and then we'll be going on the road all the way down to Homer. It's always amazing to me that in Alaska there are not huge webs of highway like we see around here. Our travelers are always amazed at that. If you are interested in going with us on our trip, just contact Bergen Travel. They'll tell you all about it. Well, I thank you so much, Kathy, for coming with me to the studio today and having just a little conversation about something that's totally different from our area, and yet we realize that there are many similarities as well. So that's all for today. Thank you, Kathy.
You're welcome.
Bye.